You know, that song reminds me of that poem by Elizabeth Barrett Browning, "The Earth is Crammed with Heaven. Every common bush afire with God." But then there's the line, "Only he or she who sees takes off their shoes." I'm intrigued by that. Only he or she who sees. I have this hunch, and this hunch is that our behavior flows from our paradigms. In other words, our behavior tends to flow from how we see the world and how we see ourselves. Now, I might want to change your behavior, and I'm a pastor, so I might be pretty good at making you feel guilty or shaming you a little bit, perhaps, or generating a whole lot of fear. Those things change behavior, but only for a short time. For lasting change in behavior, we need to change the way we see. The way we see ourselves, the way we see the world. Climate change is real. God's creation is groaning. God's holy earth is in peril. Individually and collectively, we need to change the way we walk upon this earth. Treating the earth as the sacred community it is that we all share, and not a commodity that we consume without any consideration of the consequences of our actions. Now, I might want to shame you and guilt you. I might want to bring up all sorts of statistics to scare you. But it occurs to me that a far better approach is poetry. Because maybe it's poetry and poets might actually change the way we see and draw us near to the first poet, the first artist who created all things. I really believe for the earth to be restored and renewed and healed, we somehow need to recover Tov Ma'ov. You know, that word we speak when we have no words because we're filled with such reverence and awe of the sacredness and the beauty that is everywhere. So we are so privileged today, so very privileged today to welcome Oregon's next and eighth poet laureate. A poet who is following the footsteps of poets like Edwin Markham and William Stafford, who have also been poet laureates throughout the history. This is what Governor Kate Brown said of Elizabeth Woody, that her words bring life to the places and the creatures and the people. I'm glad she considered people and creatures not the same thing, but the places and the creatures and the people that make Oregon special. Now, Elizabeth begins her assignment as Oregon's next poet laureate next month, but she is so generous of spirit that she's come to share a little bit with us today. So would you warmly welcome Oregon's poet laureate, Elizabeth Woody. And I've asked Elizabeth to begin by maybe sharing a little bit about herself and what place does land and landscape have in the writing of her poetry?
Well, I was thinking about a couple of things that occurred to me as we were sitting here together. My uncle was talking one day about the long memory. He kept going on about the long memory, and I finally asked him, I said, what is the long memory? And he said, the land. The land is the long memory. And it made me think of the consciousness that's out there in the earth and in the trees and the life and the creatures. And then I also had another question of him. I said, so everybody's talking about tradition. And these are the questions I used to ask my grandmother, but after she passed, I'd ask my uncle. And he said, tradition? How do I know? I said, how do I know what's real and what isn't? And he said that it is what people do, not out of habit, but because it's the most efficient and effective way to live. Would you want to spin your wheels when you could spend time with your family and your loved ones? Would you want to be distracted when you wanted to develop your spiritual life? No, tradition helps us codify and provide us with habitual thinking and existing so that we can feel comfort in our place, that we know where we are, and that we can make use of time better, and that we can do things for our community because we have that time. So I thought that was a very wonderful way of looking at two concepts that are that worldview or that paradigm. Then the other part of it is were these precepts. And you hear it a lot in the tribal peoples, and you hear it a lot when you look at the world religions, and it's just simple things like the golden rule, treat others as you wish to be treated. The people who I grew up with said, do no harm. Take only what you need and let the rest grow. So the kind of traditions that I'm talking about in these poems I'm going to read to you today have a lot to do with that common precept, do no harm, but also about observance and about knowing your place in the world, that collectively we're part of this long memory. We are all basically cells of one greater cell, which is the consciousness of this earth. And to tell you a little bit more about myself as my personal history, I was raised by my grandparents, Lewis and Elizabeth Pitt, who were lifelong Presbyterian church members. And my mother, and this, my grandfather told this story about his parents. The churches divided up the country that the south of the Columbia River would be open to the Presbyterian church for their missions in the Indian communities, and north of the Columbia River was open to the Catholic church. So my grandfather's mother was from the other side of the river, so she was Catholic, and his father was Presbyterian. And they wrote letters to each other. There was a big trunk that had these letters. And finally he said, you know, I'd like to marry you. And she said, well, I'm orphaned, and I'm raising my younger brother and sister. And when I'm finished raising them, I will write you, and if you still want to marry me, I will get married. And this is before at the turn of the century. And so she wrote him, and he came to get her. She had herself absolved from the Catholic Church. They went to Stevenson, Washington, which was like the Reno of the Northwest. Everybody got married there. And for some reason, they swam across the Columbia River holding onto their horses' tails. And I could not figure out why that was, but that was just, the only way that they could get across. And so she was the person who basically instilled in my grandfather his sense of duty and belief. But my mother, when she became about 16 or 17, her teenage rebellion was to become a Catholic. And she went to Mount Angel Academy in the Willamette Valley. And my father was working on the railroad. He's Navajo, and that's how she met him. So these twists and turns of life are amazing, but basically that's kind of a little bit of my background. So you can see that I have a lot of family stories that I put into my work. There is the beginning of time here, talking, the tribes talked about Salmon Woman, who was the woman who was at the head of the streams, and she was, you know, beautiful, and when the salmon come home, they're returning to her breast, into her heart, into her nourishment. So I wrote this poem called Reminiscent of Salmon Woman with that in mind. Abalone swinging on the ears of Salmon Woman signals the time to witness the dance of budding camas flowers, yellowtail butterflies, and wild roses. Spring and green and blue, light moves water. In one motion, dawn and dusk separate into daylight. Salmon Mother at the head of stream speaks. The spawning rush of salmon tails makes space for roe and milt. The salmon's precise eyes glisten. Diamonds reflect dark carbon of age in the center. The passage absorbs the deep voice of her renewal song. The woman's mouth breaks through the surface of tranquility. Now, even though my grandparents went to church, my grandmother, I would think, would be just as happy davening in a Jewish church, or as you bring the words out, she would understand that. She was very much open to all religions. She was raised by her grandmother, and they went to places like the Longhouse, which is like a big house. They went to medicine dances. She was a person who was definitely a traditional practitioner, whereas my grandfather was raised in those realms, but he was more of a Wasco person who was more contemporary and had a big ranch. So my grandmother was talking about how he had this fawn that used to dance in the 4th of July parades with their four matching palominos that used to lead the parade. And so when she was about, she never got married until later, but she saw her girlfriends are always trying to get her to get married, right? And she just said, I had my own job, I had a bank account, I didn't think I needed to have a husband. Until one day she saw my grandpa walking down the street with a group of guys in the CCC camps, which was during the WPA. And she saw him laughing, and she said, I'll date him. And her girlfriends went and found out who he was, and he was the son or the boy that had the fawn that danced in the 4th of July parades. And my grandmother said, you know, she loved that fawn. She loved deer. And of course, she married my grandfather and loved him. So these are kind of things that, like, who would think a deer would be a precursor to romance? But that's what happened. And she said, we were really poor because my father and my mother died during the influenza outbreak. And so my grandmother used to sew my dress out of flour sacks. And of course, flour sacks used to have patterns on them during that time period. And she said, but I was so poor, you know, that's all I had. And my grandfather reached over me because I sat in the middle, grabbed her hand and said, you must have been a beautiful little girl with beautiful braids on a beautiful horse. So that's the kind of environment I grew up in, was just, you know, really much made of a circle of home, sharing, storytelling, you know, more important to us than anything else. In the Longhouse, there are seven drummers who sing seven songs in sets of seven. And they're generally on the west side, and on the east side is the door opening to the sunlight. And my grandmother's uncle was a man by the name of Chief Tommy Thompson, and if you knew anything about Oregon history, he was, I think, the last chief down at Celilo before the falls were inundated. And he had a little bird on a pole outside of his big house. So it's something, this place is where people gather. So just so you know that, the seven hands, seven hearts, this is a drum beating to me. The circle is made of ourselves, relatives, friends, linger past the comfort of age and sleep. The people are a circle of respect on the floor. East is the sun, a pattern painted over the doorframe. Songs gather in motion and the light rustle of drummers, seven hands, seven hearts, seven parts of the earth. The rumble calls into the echo, the longhouse of our past. In this house, shawls rest over shoulders like palms. In this house, children in simple lines move around the floor, oldest to smallest. The floor vibrates with the dancers. A song in one throat draws up the drums. The hand moves. With one heart, we move. The song is in each place, seen and unseen. Shells move as feathers touch air. We send this pulse to the center and outward. The sun over our heads extends hands of warmth. We send out a surge of recognition with one light. There's this one song that I really love, and I asked my grandmother to translate it for me, and she said it was really hard. But she said, we see light. God is in this light. We are pure light in ourselves. I was going to read Longhouse 2 for you, and this is kind of a second section, and things are kind of like men and women have different roles and responsibilities. And one time we took some friends to a Huckleberry feast, and this one gentleman got up in our party and started cleaning the tables. And I went and grabbed him and I made him sit down again, and I said, he goes, well, I'm a liberated man, I don't mind helping. And I said, well, good. I said, but we're liberated here, and we all have our roles to play. And the young girls clear the tables. That's their job. That's how they contribute to the community. So when you're up there helping, you're taking that job from them. They're probably glad you help, but basically that's how they help. And, you know, the men are the hunters, the women are the gatherers. And that's kind of like how I see things, basically, is, you know, by these opposites or reflections. In this poem, I'm talking about, again, these songs and just giving you an idea of what it feels like. My great uncle and his nephews kneel together, heads bent, right hands cupped and swing, arcing to the center of chests. They move from knees to feet in a simple and smooth lift. This is our sight as men dance. They are beads in the string of song. My great aunt stands face to the center, her daughters and nieces beside her. They cup their hands like everyone around them, walk the circle, twirling hands raised at west, then east. Their skirts wave in grace. There's energy as this is made of light in our blood. Our mind's wind moves among us. Their voices are pure, tell of our timeless choice. Lines of hearts feeling, voices spark a warmth into the bleak cavity held too long in the weary. Knees bend and lift to join with threads of brilliant hairpipe bones and shell necklaces, the bead of skin upon skin, seven times, sets of seven.
When we talked on the phone, she said, well, people couldn't possibly tolerate more than three poems. I think you're wrong, but thank you so much. He or she who sees takes off their shoes. We continue to worship God as the offering is received.